Welcome to the SystemEye Network podcast titled Take the 5-Minute SystemEye Vulnerability Test, featuring Dan Reel, president of SecureMyEye.com.
Good day, everyone. I'm Chris Maxer, news editor for SystemEye News Magazine, and I'm here today with Dan Reel to discuss common IBM Eye and SystemEye vulnerabilities. Dan is the president of the IT Security and Compliance Group, which you can find at SecureMyEye.com. He's a SystemEye security specialist who performs security assessments, training, and services for corporations all over the world. Dan previously served as the founder and president of the PowerTech Group. We are pleased to have him with us here today.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be here. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to speak to this group on this podcast, and I'm looking forward to this test.
All right. Hey, speaking of tests, the format for this podcast is simple. Dan's going to ask some, like, test sort of questions that you can use, that you would want to use and ask if you test your own environment for vulnerabilities. And I'll ask some questions as well, and we'll try to get to the heart of some common issues that you may face. All right, let's jump right in. Dan?
Good. From what I've experienced going to numerous companies and performing vulnerability assessments for companies large and small, there seems to be a common grain of security vulnerabilities that I find. And this test will kind of highlight some of those and give you the chance to kind of give yourself a quick test of your own system. Our first test question is, do too many users have powerful system privileges on your system? Or we can state it another way. Number one, how many users have all object special authority on your machine? And you can kind of take a guess at that, maybe write it down on a slip of paper. The other one is, how many users have job control special authority on your machine? Try to take a guess at those. Generally, what I see is that too many users have been assigned very high powerful system privileges that can be used to compromise the security, integrity, and availability of your system. For example, I typically see that dozens of users have all object authority, which is analogous to root authority on other systems. But a user with all object authority can't be restricted from accessing and manipulating any file or any resource on the system. I also see that there really hasn't been any effort to restrict job control special authority. In almost all cases, there are way too many users with job control authority, and a user with job control can really be the operator of your machine. They can start and stop subsystems and control the jobs of other users. So even those users that are command line restricted, there are several ways for Sluggo out on the loading dock to bring down your interactive subsystem. Now, the way that you can check up on this on your own system is to use the command print user profile. That's PRTUSRPRF, and then it will print a report, review the report for the special authorities for all your users, and you can count up how many have all object and how many have job control.
All right, Dan. Hey, so why do so many users have job control authority anyway? I mean, that seems like an ability, you know, should only be assigned on purpose to operations staff.
That's a great question. Normally, we copy new users from existing users. A long time ago, system administrators assigned job control to all the users so that they could review the reports of other users and control printers and things like that. Assigning job control was a quick and easy way to provide the access to the reports rather than correctly securing the output queues. It was easier to assign job control and even spool control authority to those users. And now when these old user profiles are copied into new user profiles, the job control just propagates unnecessarily to the new user profiles. Again, job control is not needed by the end users. We secure our output queues correctly. But as it stands now, most end users can bring down the subsystems, in effect shutting down the system. Now I want to move on to the next question, Chris, and that is, how many user accounts have a password on your system that exactly matches their username? Now we refer to this as a default password. And the question is, how many users do you have where the user ID exactly matches the password? And again, just write it down. And then you can test yourself on it by the checkup test that I have for you in a moment. Now, the reason why this is such a big deal to have these default passwords is that IT auditors that will come in to examine your implementation, they look to a document and a framework called COBIT. And Section 5.2 of COVID, it talks about identification, authentication, and access. And that requires authentication mechanisms like passwords to be sufficient to prevent users from accessing files and resources that are not directly related to their area of responsibility. The authentication has to be strong enough to allow linking users to the activity that they perform so that we can know that Bob did this activity on the machine. When we have default passwords, it's way too easy for a user to sign on as another user and perform actions that would then be linked to the user with the default password. You know, everyone in your company knows your user account naming standards, like maybe your naming standard is the first letter of your first name followed by your full last name. Well, in too many cases, that is also going to be the password. And when that's the case, you know, we send out a letter that says, Joe Bell is going to be starting as our new accounts payable supervisor, starting in 2 weeks. Now we know that there is a user profile out there called J Bell, and that there is also a password associated with that user called J Bell, so I can use that and sign on as the supervisor. Now, the way that you can check up on this on your system to find out how many users you have that have these default passwords is to use the command Analyze Default Passwords, ANZDFTPWD, and make sure you take the action of star none. If you don't specify an action of star none, it'll use that action anyway, but just to be sure. The other option is to disable the profile, which we don't want to disable the profile, so make sure you take Analyze Default Password with an action of none, and then review the report that comes out of that, and that will list for you all of the users that have a default password.
So, Dan, this is back to the why again. I mean, why are there so many of these default passwords out there?
Again, a good question. When we create these accounts on the System I, unless the person creating the account specifies otherwise, the password is going to be the same as the user account. It's the way that IBM set up the Create User Profile command. And it requires an overt action on the part of the person creating the profile to assign a password other than the default to the account. It's kind of become the standard that when we create a new user, we allow the default password to be their password so that if their user ID is J Bell, the initial password will be J Bell, and then we make sure that we specify that the password is expired so that the first time the user logs on, they need to change the password to some non-default value that only they know. The problem is that when we create these user profiles ahead of time for these new users, sometimes we create them weeks ahead of time of when the account is actually supposed to be used. This leaves that default password out there for a long time that somebody could then use. Sometimes we find that these users that we pre-create never log on, and there was actually no reason to ever create the account. Most systems have some user accounts on there that were created years ago and that the user has never, ever logged on even once. So when creating new user accounts, I recommend that you set the password to star none so that the user can't sign on, and then the new user has to communicate with the system administrator or the help desk, which will then set for them a one-time password, and the user can sign on and then set the password to their own liking. You just can't leave these active accounts out there with a default password. So use the user profile or the Analyze Default Password command to determine how many default passwords you have. Now, Chris, I'm ready to move on to the next question here, and that is, can you know when someone downloads a sensitive file? The related question is, can you control who can download what files? Yeah, we do have object-level authorities in place, but typically those are pretty wide open. So we have these interfaces like FTP or iSeries Access File Transfer, ODBC, and typically all traffic through those network interfaces is not audited and it's not regulated other than by the OS 400 object level authorities themselves, which again are typically not up to the job of securing the data. There is no logging of any FTP traffic and no logging of any file transfer. So how can you know when someone downloads a sensitive file? I have my payroll file. Who downloaded it? Or did anybody download it? A few months ago, I wrote an article for System I News magazine on the topic of preventing invisible access to production data, in which I describe this huge problem and the solutions. You can check into the article archives at systeminetwork.com. Who downloaded the payroll master file? Who downloaded your customer file, your pricing files? How about your bill of materials for your proprietary and secret manufacturing process? Who downloaded the health records for your public figures who happen to be patients at your medical center? And who downloaded the blood test results? You know, the way that the System I ships from IBM, there is no logging of any of this activity. So can you know? How can you know? You know, data theft is a huge problem in IT security today. It's just so easy to download a file to the PC, copy it maybe to a USB drive, a thumb drive, and walk out of the building with this sensitive data file. Or you can email the file just to get it off the premises to a competitor or to someone that would do something nefarious with it. We have to be able to identify and control all the database access and the database transfers. Now, in order to check up to see if you are able to watch these transfers or to log these transfers, you can use the command work with registration information, WRKREGINF, and in there are listed the IBM supplied exit points, and find the one for the FTP server. This is just dealing with FTP right now. Find the one for the FTP server. It's called QIBM underscore QTMF underscore server underscore REQ. And when you find that, and it'll be listed as the FTP server request, and select option number 8 that lists the exit programs. Now, check and see if there's one listed. If there is not a program listed at that exit point, then you have no visibility of any FTP server activity. So someone can download a file, upload a file, run remote commands through your FTP server, do all kinds of things that you have no visibility of whatsoever. If you do have a program listed here, it could be that you have a commercial software package in place or that you've written your own FTP server exit program. If you do have a program there, you need to know what it's doing, because you can actually have an FTP program in place at the FTP server sign-on exit point that bypasses any user ID or password checking. So you need to make sure that you know what the programs are doing. And you also need to know whether you have those programs in place for not only FTP, but for the file transfer server, for the file server, which serves a net server, for ODBC, for remote command, and all of the other network interfaces to the data.
So, Dan, you know, there have been, you know, several security software vendors out there who have exit programs for FTP and solutions that cover that. So given those exposures, why do you think there are so many companies out there who have not yet invested in exit programs?
Well, I think at this point, most of the large companies have invested in commercial exit program solutions. And again, there are several different commercial vendors, software vendors for the system in this exit point space. It's really in the small to medium business space where the exposures don't get the attention they deserve. A lot of the companies have been given a application package from a vendor and don't really have a lot of technical expertise on the machine. And in those cases, we do see that the IBM business partners that are working with them sometimes will recommend to them that they get some exit point software. Other times, they don't. Other times, these companies don't have a tight relationship with an IBM business partner. But it also comes from an issue in the auditing community. The external auditors that would come in, like KPMG or Deloitte or Ernst & Young or PwC. Recently, I was teaching a System-I security class to a group of IT auditors. This was down in Nashville. They were from several different companies, including external auditors from KPMG, Ernst & Young, and Deloitte & Touche. When I explained to these auditors that there was no logging of FTP traffic on the System-I, their eyes got big, their jaws dropped open, and they were in disbelief. They had no idea that there was such an exposure that was happening on the System I, and these were folks that were responsible for auditing the System I platform. So many auditors are not aware of this vulnerability on the System I, and there's a lot of companies that are only going to make any kind of a capital investment in System I security when they've been flagged on an audit. When an audit has pointed out a material deficiency, then they're ready to move at that time very quickly. But for those large companies, they typically are covered by the exit point protection. Now, whether they're actually controlling access or just logging access is another question, because you really need to control the access, which I think the majority do not. And so instead, they do have a log of what has occurred, which is a heck of a lot better than having no record at all. Now, to move on to our next question, can you tell who changed that payroll amount to $1 million? Right. So are you collecting database access for forensic analysis? Can you tell who accessed a sensitive database record? And these are kind of all the same question. Can you tell who changed that payroll amount? Do you have forensic data on who changed your data records? Or can you tell who looked or accessed a sensitive data record on your machine? Almost all critical application data on your system can be viewed and manipulated by the technical staff members, as we all know, and most end users, and there is no audit trail of data access. You know, there's nothing built into the system that is going to give me an audit trail of data access. When a discrepancy is found in a database record, somebody changed the salary to $1 million, which maybe that's not a discrepancy, maybe that was certainly a reasonable salary for the custodian. How and when was the record changed? Who made the change using what program? It would be important to be able to report that someone in the mailroom lowered an invoice amount using a DFU program or a DBU or EasyView or QuestView or one of the other database record editors. So you want to be able to know when somebody is playing with your data outside of the normal program interfaces. All this information is available if the database file is journaled and if the journals are retained for analysis. You know, you can also use trigger programs as an option to collect this type of data. But I recall last year there was a big hubbub, and I was kind of interested in this. There was a big hubbub when it was disclosed that employees of certain federal agencies had viewed computer records containing private sensitive information on various political figures. Obviously, this was around the election time. They were able to tell that employees and contractors had viewed the data. Now, if this was your agency, would you be able to know who had viewed certain sensitive database records? Typically, on the system I, you can't, unless you have some kind of software in place to do that. Now, database journaling is going to allow you to discover the details for add and change and delete operations, and should be in place for all files that contain sensitive data. And the ability to report on who viewed a particular data record would most likely be accommodated using a trigger program. But on your system, how can you check to see whether you have this vulnerability or not? Generally, we need to find out who has access to the file so we can display the object authority on the library itself where the sensitive data lives. DSP OBJ AUT will allow you to display the object authority on the library. If the public has use or better rights, then the public has the rights to the information inside the library. And then on the individual sensitive file, again, display the object authority, DSP OBJ AUT, on the sensitive file itself. And if public has use, then it's viewable. Change, it's changeable. If they have more than change, then they can potentially delete the entire file. To determine if you're recording the changes made to these files, you can use the command DSPFD, display file description on the file, and inside that report that is displayed, you can look to find out there's a phrase in there that says file is currently journaled, and it'll say yes or no. And then there will also be some information in there. If you have a trigger program that is associated with this file, you can just search through that report for the word trigger program or trigger. The other question is, if we are journaling everything, which we get in many high availability solutions, are the journal receivers saved and how far back can you go? You can implement also real-time rules and alerts through trigger programs or database journal harvester type programs and messaging software to alert you when a particular user or a particular excluded user views a particular database record. Now, that's the end of the test. It's a short test, but those critical elements can determine a lot about how secure your machine is. So please check your system for this for these items. If you want to share the results of what you found or have comments or questions regarding the presentation, you can send an email to me at testme, T-E-S-T-M-E, at securemyi.com. It's spelled just the way that you would think, securemyi.com. Chris?
All right, Dan, I want to thank you for your insight and those illuminating test questions. And for everyone listening, have a great day.